Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Hi folks, I'm Jack Kennedy and welcome to Farm Tech Talk, the livestock show. The rain is back, but the good news is prices are still good across the sector for all sectors, beef, sheep and dairy. Shout out to our supporters, European Milk Forum and Grassland Agro for helping us make this happen. We normally start with the quick fire round, so we'll start once again with it. Adam, we've lots of questions in for you this week. Let me read this out. First one for you. I have a limousine weanlings, sucked or bred bullocks and heifers, average weight 450 kilos, 12 months old. I sell them at home. Ask Adam to give me a price per kilo in the yard, please.
Yeah, so he sells them at home. So it's always a bit of a debate, Jack, as regards where you need to be at. And I suppose it depends on the quality of the calves. But for the top third of those calves, you're looking at sort of 270, possibly 280, 285 for the bull calves, probably 270, 275 for the heifer calves. That's sort of a good gauge. But it all depends on the quality. Sometimes you have to come back a little bit off that top third, because generally if you have a bunch of calves, they won't all be maybe in that top third. You'll have a few average ones as well. So maybe come back maybe 5, 10 cent off that.
Okay, nice one. That gives him a gauge to go on, Adam. Second question. I have three Friesian bulls born March 2020 that I'm finished with after breeding. So these are probably on John's herds. Sell in the mart, sell in the yard, feed them and factor them. How long would it take? He's these three Friesian bulls. They've been running around after dairy cows. They're probably, it is September, so they're probably, or it is August. So they're probably like not in bad shape, but they're probably not great either. You know, the kind of a way, because the sell them in the yard, feed them, factor them. How long would it take if you started feeding them, Adam? Like, talk to me.
Yeah, good gosh, three, Jack. Unless you're finishing a lot of cattle, these type of animals are generally the sort of animals you'll get jumped in on a load. If you're killing a couple of bullocks or you're killing a couple of heifers, they'll go in along with it, sort of, and they'll almost doing you a favor to kill them. What we do in Tullamore is we'll take them out from the cows, give them good grass, give them a good dose, maybe a little bit of meal for about 30 days, clean them up a little bit, and then head to the live trade, or somebody comes into the yard and buys them down below. So I think that's probably the best option.
Yeah. Okay. Next one, Adam. I saw an 07 limo cow, 800 kilos, sell for €2,000 the other day, isn't the mart. She was slaughtered that day in the local factory. I reckon she would need 455 per kilo to cover costs. Would Adam explain the €2,000 and why someone purchased her for €2,000?
It's hard to explain it. Look, it's great to see it. And the person that's buying that animal knows what they're doing, because it's all maybe wholesalers, factory agents. You have a couple of really hungry wholesalers at the moment that have got very good contracts for wholesale beef, and they're very, very good customers for those sort of heavy type cows. Now, 2,000 euros seems very, very strong price. She must have been a serious cow, an 07 cow as well. You'll sometimes see that price for very young cows because some of those wholesalers are getting away up to 48 months with some of those cows and sort of getting them away as sort of heifers maybe. So that's the reason why some of those younger cows are making big prices. But that seems a very good price for an 07 cow.
14 years old, like, and you say you're not making money, you're the best ever. Yeah. The next one in, I'm not sure, is it made more of a comment? Well, lads, I know why you didn't get reap in Tullamore, because you're not growing rushes. Joke paying farmers to grow rushes. Food production no longer being financed going into the future. I'll take it as a comment, Adam. We might come back to it later on in the show when we talk a bit about cap and what's happening there. Last one for you, Adam. I have 26 Angus heifers from 400 to 500 kilos. Do you think the beef price will hold till October, you know, if he starts feeding them for the factory, or am I as well going to the mart in August and September?
I think with Angus heifers, Jack, I'd hold and I'd go the whole hog with them and I'd finish them because, you know, Finnish cattle are tight. Angus cattle are very sought after, good bonuses. And I think you'll finish them easy enough off grass, you know, sort of in September, October. So I think, I'd hold tight and I'd finish them.
Nice one. Thanks for that. That's the quick fire for Adam. Darren, moving on to you. I have a question on sheep. Suckler farming here on heavy ground. So this lad is leaving, Adam. Suckler farming here on heavy ground and thinking of reducing numbers and getting into sheep. What criteria for eligibility for the sheep fencing grant? Is it still 40% of the fencing cost? Darren, sheep grant. Fencing is obviously important if he's thinking of getting into sheep. Is the grant still 40% and how is he eligible or how does he get in for it?
Yes, Jack, still 40% say for the general, 60% for a young trained farmer. And what he has to make sure is that he has a minimum of 40 sheep at the time that he's putting in his payment application. You don't have to have it when you're submitting an application, say, for the grant aid, but you have to have them after, say, when you're putting in for payment, and you have to maintain sheep in 5 years, same as all, same buildings and all of them times thing. You have to use them as is for 5 years.
Okay. And Darren, it's 40% of the cost of the stakes and the wire. I mean, that's what it is. The labour piece, how does that work?
If he wants to put in labour himself, Jack, say he can put it in. Now, I suppose we should mention that this week in the journal, there is, say, 2 pages of all the reference costs. So your man there is going to be in a new cost. He's 10% up for his sheep fence if it's in a lowland area. And he's also 10% up on labour. It's over 14 euros an hour. So if he was doing his own job, he puts in his invoices and he puts in the time for doing it.
Perfect. Second quick fire for you, Darren. I've been slaughtering lambs in factory for at least the last 20 years. Last week, my 21 kilo carcass is worth 130 euros. 45, 47 kilo live weight. Same lambs in local mart, mix of rams and ewes, made 139. So they made 9 euros more in the mart, bought by agent for same factory. Is my QA worth anything, is the question this farmer is asking.
Yeah, Jack, I don't know if it's QA that is the one that's screwing the farmer there. It's probably an element of where the whole trade is at the moment. And we do see this. We see at times that the factory trade is ahead of the mart. Mm. We see at times then when lamb supplies get very tight. And that's what's happening at the moment. Mm. That if you go into any mart sale, the number of lambs over 46, 47 kilos is tight. There's a right good butcher and wholesale demand. And that is increasing demand within factory agents. And look at, they're on a sweeter deal than what your query is there. Mm. 9 euros probably seems at the outside of it, but look, you'll often get a pin of sheep or two people that get stuck in together, and it could be a case that there was nice old lambs on it, because we are seeing that there is a premium being given for good quality old lambs. But look at it, it's that at the moment.
A bit unfair to blame the QA, you're saying. Okay, excellent, we'll come back to it, Darren, in the main show. John, looking at you, just a question for the grass experts. You're a grass expert. If I spread clover seed over my grass, will it grow, and what's the best time of the year to do it?
Look, I think there's a lot of people trying to get the clover out now to reduce their nitrogen and that, and the sustainability side of things as well. But I suppose timing-wise, first of all, like, the best time to do it is late in the spring or early in the summer. Just gives you a chance to manage the ground. And I think that's the biggest part of establishing clover, is the actual management after it goes out. So it can be spread. Like, you'd hear different going out with fertilizer spreaders or the gut Kessler, they'd be two kind of most common ways of oversowing clover. And then managing it wise then is you're grazing it at low cover so that the grass isn't getting ahead of the clover. So you want to be grazing it below a cover of around 1,000 for the next 3 to 4 grazings. So that's kind of
it. It's fair to say though, John, like it's shoving on in the year now. It's probably too late. You know, I think that, you know, it's too late for spreading clover seed at this stage. You're better off holding off now till next April, May or June and trying it then.
Yeah, exactly. Because I suppose it's going to depend on ground conditions too. So whether you can get back into paddocks and get them grazed off at those lighter covers. And if grass gets ahead of the clover then, and at this stage of the year, you're trying to build covers too. Like, so grazing them light isn't ideal either. So it's, yeah, I'd be leaving it till next year now at this stage. But.
And second question for you, John, what target grass cover per cow for August? So what's the barometer for August? Here we are now, early August, like having the chat, like what's the target grass cover per cow for August?
Yeah, so from the start of August there, we're kind of looking at that cover of, so up to now we've been targeting between 160 to 180 kilos of dry matter per livestock unit or per cow. And from now on, kind of we're looking at staying at the higher end of that, so the 180 for the first half of August. But by the middle of August, you'd want to be up around the 200 for, that's on a stocking rate of 2.5. Up, like you're looking at around the 250 on a tree.
Stock the tree cost per hectare, right?
Yeah.
So, okay.
But yeah, look, I suppose it's, you're trying to, although there's still people struggling with moisture deficits, it's hard to tell them to start building covers when they're struggling to have grass ahead of them. But that's that's the target that we're aiming for.
It is, yeah. Okay, I might come back to you on that in a bit. Yeah. There's two other ones here, John. Why are co-ops not keeping pace with milk price? And they got the increase in processing costs for 7 cents a litre, and they're still shortchanging the farmer. Smells like meat processors rotten, yet price dropped immediately. So, yeah, and then there's a second piece. It's related. Well, it's similar question. Hi, lads. Why are co-ops holding back on milk price? So, I mean, this, John, it refers to the whole piece of milk price relative to the PPI or the Ornua PPI, and the fact that there is a difference opened up there in the last couple of months of kind of 1.5, 2, 2.5, and it's probably even 3 cents a litre of a gap between what Ornua are delivering from the market and what the co-ops are. I mean John, it's a hard question to answer, and I mean, you know, for either me or you, you know, but I mean, I suppose it does come back to that the co-ops are kind of, they have farmer directors sitting around their tables, and it's up to the individuals, the farmers, to make contact with the, do you feel, John, from going around, like you're going around to a lot of farmers there, you're going around to a lot of grass groups, like, do you feel that farmers are engaged enough with their kind of co-op, their local co-op directors, in kind of terms of pushing on, in terms of kind of, I suppose, just engaging on milk price or other things that the co-op are doing?
Yeah, I suppose, look, it's as you say, it's a very difficult one to look at. But I think if most farmers look at even like the biggest chance as farmers we have to speak up about these things is all year long. You can be talking to your board members and that, who essentially are like they're behind the running of the co-ops. Like, but we also have the opportunity to go to the AGMs and speak up and I don't think what percentage of people actually turn up to those to actually say that. When they get the opportunity to talk, are people actually talking up? It's a difficult one, but it is like it's run by the farmer, so it's definitely like get in touch with the board members and that, and at least look, have your voice heard anyway. If that's the best thing you can do.
It. Exactly, you have the opportunity there, and take it when it's there. As you say, there is a gap opened up when we had the PPI out this week again, and that's gone up a touch again from for July, so that's gone up a touch again. So it'll be interesting to see what co-ops do on milk price in the next week and 10 days. Thanks, John. I'll come back to you in a bit, Adam. In terms of just the kind of the main show and some of the big things that have happened, I suppose in the last week. I mean, Look at the cap piece is, it's front and central for a lot of your clients, and it's front and central for a lot of farming in general. Like, you know what I mean? The one piece, I suppose, that has kind of developed even since we went to print, Adam, I suppose, is this piece around the suckler cow, and is there going to be a cap on numbers, etc., and that kind of thing. I mean, it's probably still not for definite in terms of what's going to happen there, are we? Like, just talk to me about kind of what's happening there.
No, Jack, there's a bit of confusion there, I guess, at the outset. It's positive to see BDGP and BEEP coming in, emerging into a scheme, you know, that carbon efficiency scheme, the suckler carbon efficiency scheme. But There's huge consternation out there, a lot of anger around that capping of suckler cows, that if a farmer enters into the scheme, that they won't be allowed increased cow numbers over the duration of the contract of what the Department of Agriculture have called it. I don't think that's right, Jack, at all. In terms of, we look at other sectors, we look at the dairy sector, there's a dairy scheme there in terms of using sex semen. There's no requirement there to reduce numbers or to cap numbers. And similarly on sheep, there's no requirement there either. And like, this is a clear message from the Department of Agriculture and from the government at the moment to say that, look, we don't want suckler cows. We want less suckler cows in the future. The whole team going through that strategic plan is less grass, less animals, less food production. It's completely going towards the environment. And that's not going to sit well with my lads, Jack. And I know for a fact that they'll get it very hard to get farmers to participate in that scheme if there's a cap put on numbers.
And Adam, I mean, would it sit well even with, call it, the Western Seaboard? Those guys that have in huge numbers will say, and don't want huge numbers, or don't want to grow, will say, are kind of, is there a difference in thinking with some of those clients?
Maybe it is. And look, I spoke about that in the paper in terms of, you know, towards the West, maybe it's a little bit more palatable in terms of those areas of the farm that maybe are in habitat and maybe are difficult to farm, that maybe it'll suit some of those farms to reduce stock numbers and maybe still get paid their entitlements on that habitat area, that scrub area of the farm. But I'd really worry for the full-time beef farmer on good land, Jack, maybe towards the east of the country, you know, maybe depending on suckler cows to generate the income to whatever, just for income for a farm family, they're going to have tough decisions to make, because I think in terms of the direction of where we're going, it's less, we're ignoring all the research. Chuggers research for the last 20 years has pointed to, you know, stocking rate and output as being key drivers of profitability on a beef farm. And yet here we have the current strategic plan is to reduce. And it's not more money. We're not getting more money for that. We're just holding on to what we have. And that's without, well, the eco schemes coming out, and without convergence, and without Chris in terms of, you know, front loading entitlements on small farms. So it's a very difficult time for a full-time beef farmer.
We'll touch off it again, obviously, with Darren, Adam. But I mean, in terms of your guys and in terms of kind of the money from CAP, we don't have the specifics on the kind of what that new suckler cow scheme is going to make, you know, per, like, is it a per cow or per hectare figure, or what kind? We don't have the numbers on that. Have you any kind of insight in terms of where that might end up, or kind of what's kind of happening?
No, I suppose if we merge the two last schemes together, Jack, you're probably talking somewhere around 160, 170 a cow in terms of BDGP and BEEP. And look, you'd have to say it'll have to be similar to that. Maybe there'll be extra on top of that, because there's a couple of extra actions in there around forage quality that might be added onto that. It's going to be probably BDGP was on a hectare basis, because it was brought through sort of through, you know, efficiency and climate change, and we'll probably see this scheme maybe being something similar in terms of how it'll be brought through. So it'll be payment on a hectare, and it'll be so many cows per hectare then you get paid on. It's a way of paying out that money without linking it to production.
Now, it does mean that you probably have to hold the hectares, does it? So it's locking you into cow numbers and hectares, maybe.
It hasn't. In terms of BDGP, that wasn't an issue, because the stocking rate was fairly low in terms of what you needed to justify the payment. So it wasn't an issue in BDGP. If they follow the same model, it'll be fine. But I guess that big nub of the issue is the capping on the numbers and that contract piece as well around that sort of 5-year contract, or what it's going to be.
Adam, I'll leave the last question on the cap side of things. Just that reference year piece, like, you know, I mean, I think that we don't know the particular year, but we have a kind of an indication that it's historical. So that means then that it must be, you know, it's 2021, 2020, or 2019, you would expect, you know, probably in that. Is that a fair assumption, or
I think you're right, Jack. I think in the past, we'd say BDGP was set on historical reference years as well. That's to avoid, I suppose, farmers ramping up numbers next year. Look, if I was a betting man, I'd be saying 2021, I'd say it'll be the reference year for that scheme to be implemented in 2023. Mm-hmm. And that's, as I said, to avoid farmers, you know, up on their numbers in the next 12 months.
And will Adam, would that be cows calved in 2021 or 2020? Like, is that?
That's the way it was in the past. And maybe it'll be a combination of the 2 years, maybe 20 and 2021, the average number of cows that was calved over that period. That's the way it is with BDGP. As I said, it was set on a historical reference period, and that's the number you get paid on. And look, there's always winners and losers out of that, because if you're down a certain number of cows for a certain reference year, you're down on payment. But I suppose it's the fairest way maybe of doing it as regards going into the future.
Yeah. Okay, two quick ones, Adam. I've
taken up a lot enough of your time in terms of weanlings, and I suppose it's beginning to ramp up now in terms of the trade for weanlings and the weanling sales. Like, what's your getting weanlings ready for sales now? What's the top tips that you need to be kind of thinking of?
Yeah, it's probably creep feeding, Jack, is probably the number one thing there in terms of, look, an animal's very efficient at that young age in terms of converting meal into weight. You'll keep your weight gains going quite well if you go in with that little bit of creep at this stage. You'll firm up your calves, and I think it's money well spent if you're going to sell weanlings in the yard. I'm not going in, we'll say, you know, loading meal into them, but just maybe 2 to 3 kilos to bull calves, maybe a kilo and a half to heifer calves. And just after that, it's attention to detail, making sure you have your bull separated from your heifers, that you have no heifers coming back to you in 6 months' time, making sure maybe vaccination is there, because you're thinking of the customer too, that customer will hopefully be back to you next year if there's no issues with your calves, making sure everything's dehorned, maybe a little bit of clipping as well. It pays that little bit of attention to detail, I think, when that animal enters the ring, you've probably 30, 40 seconds to sell that animal, and just have it and everything right on the day, knowing your market, going the day you think the customers are there, talk to the manager, what sort of weight of calves is needed, all that little things. And look at Kieran Mealy is a great sort of top tips piece in this week's paper around what you should be looking at if you're selling weanlings in the next 2 months.
Adam, is it a kind of a 12-14% nut or course or whatever? What are lads typically feeding?
It's simple, Jack. It's not this big coloury bag with a lovely picture on the front of it that's costing maybe €12 a bag. It's that standard sort of ration, good barley, maybe a bit of soy in it, maybe a little bit of fibre in terms of citrus or beet pulp or something like that. Very, very simple rations are fine in terms of calves and looking for quality. Yeah, 12 or 14% is fine.
It doesn't have to be loaded with molasses. Adam, last one, I suppose, just on the update. Give us a kind of a trade update in terms of, I suppose, what has happened in the market and in the factories this week.
Yeah, we've seen a massive ramp up on the kill, Jack. The highest kill this year, 34,000 we killed last week. Bullock kill ramped up unbelievable, up 2,000 bullocks. Probably put a little bit of pressure on the bullock price. We're sort of egging on there every week. It's probably steady there in sort of 420, 425. Heifer's still 430, 435. I guess AHDB, the Board B equivalent in the UK, issued their market outlook report last Friday, very, very positive. Food service recovery coming back, that's going to help Irish finishers because we're generally going into that food service trade in the UK. So I think it's all very positive. Cow trade very good, and I think, for the next couple of weeks, I'd say you'll see numbers maybe tighten back a little bit. The thing that's happening at the moment, Jack, is that the 30-month limit is playing into factories' hands because the big number of births in February and March 19, they're coming to 30 months now at the moment. So farmers maybe have to sell. But I think the rain coming, it'll ease things in the south, and I can't see any, huge issues on the horizon for beef price.
Okay, 100%. Adam, thanks for that. We'll chat again next week and get more on the cap as it develops, I suppose. Darren, looking at you, 44,000 for a ram, fair play to you, and they're trying to direct more of the cap money into your basket, disadvantage. Donegal, disadvantage. Yeah, 44,000 for the ram. Talk to me, what's he going doing?
I don't know, was the sheep welfare scheme money, Jack, going to buy him, or else there's some Donegal farmers know something that I don't know or other farmers don't know. But look at, I suppose it's a main talking point. Dollar ram at 34,000, it's a huge talking point.
Are they Darren, going into the equivalent? Are they going into will they be stud rams, or what way does it work in the sheep circles?
Yeah, Jack, look at the top price ram. I think that what was driving him is his bloodlines, and that, yeah, it's a real look at Shane and know a lot more on it, but this from what I know of it is that his bloodlines are really sought after. The farmer who purchased them will probably try and exploit that, and probably won't be maybe breeding too much off him because he won't want to dilute the genetics he's after paying big for.
Yeah.
But I look at the wads in that.
He's an outcross, so, and he suits, the potential for him is big because he's an outcross.
I imagine that's what's driving it. And look at in the second price ram sale, it was a cohort of two or three farmers together, and they'll use them across different ones. There has been a few record prices. We've seen a record price in the Shirley Rams as well. And look at it, I suppose they're the big talking figures. General rams are up anywhere, I suppose, maybe 50, 80, 100. Even in that Suffolk sale, some of the commercial rams were up as high as €200. Not every breed is getting the same rubber to green, Jack. There has been a few, I suppose, maybe difficult sales just in the last day or two. But in general, very good. And you look at the breeding side and the female side has started phenomenal as well.
That's the how I was going to come to the Hollis. Were you in Tullow on Wednesday? Was that the first real kind of breeding sale per se?
Yeah, it's probably the one, Jack, that a lot of people use as a barometer. Yeah, and I was down there. Look, it was a hive of, I suppose, optimism. There was a lot of confidence, plenty of buyers, and there was probably a more, I suppose, maybe a more sort of consistent tone to the trade than in recent years. In recent years, you'd always get your high prices, and you'd be, say, talking that evening, or the farmers be talking about a penny of hoggets or a penny of your lambs making big money. And look, the same thing happened. There was a couple of the prize winners on the hoggets side, bet 260 to 285. On the your lambs, there was a handful of pins from 200 to 275, which, look, they're going to be the talking points. But for me, it was the consistency of the general run of sheep. That if we look at hoggets, the average hoggets price is up over 40 euros. Now, that's a serious increase in 1 year, Jack. Yeah, yeah. The hoggets price is averaged over 240. And the hoggets that were making somewhere between sort of 175 and 200 last year, they're the hoggets that really got the increase. And that was all driven by commercial farmers to have more confidence because of lamb prices and because of the cull year price. Yeah. And no different than the your lamb side. The general run of your lambs was somewhere between 140 and 165, up 20 euros ahead on the same sale last year.
Okay. I had it in my head that they would blow the lights out and you get those high pins, I suppose, those good quality pins. I thought they'd go over 300, you know what I mean? But you're saying they didn't really. It was the average coming up more so than the kind of top blowing the lights out.
It was, and like I was down with the Tullow sheep breeders the week before. They had their annual pairs night, and I was giving them an update on the markets while the judging was going on. And it was really interesting to get a gauge of what they were expecting. And look, they knew there was going to be more life in it, but they had, an anticipation, like everybody had, that them few top price pins would exceed the 300 euros. That was the barometer, I think. Yeah. It was really billed before the sale of, will this be the first sale that your hoggets really, I suppose, maybe in significant numbers hitting over 300 euros? Yeah. You often see it maybe for some of the, say, the pedigree side of things, but you don't really see it on the commercial side. And it just showed that there is an upper limit. This, I suppose, the saying gold can be bought to the air, Jack, comes into mind. But it was really this, once you got to 250, 260, that the number of fellas you had to push them on, and like that pin of sheep at 285, look, they were phenomenal sheep. And did he get paid, as good for the sheep he had as the farmer that got paid 220 to 240? Look, he'll argue he didn't. But on any year, Jack, there's no farmer that wants to pass 200 euros for hoggets that's going to be given out for.
Yeah. Darren, before we just touch off the cap, I mean, in terms of those hoggets you bring them home, or in terms of that ram that you bring home, like we say, from the sales, like, I mean, what's kind of the one key point that you kind of definitely want to do, like we'll say, to best look after those hoggets or that new ram that comes into the place? Like, what are they? Are they in isolation? Are they in a shed or in a field? Or kind of what's kind of the best practice job there?
Yeah, definitely this year, Jack. You have to be paying so much for them that this year is a year to mind them. And look, the ideal is home in the shed for 24 to 48 hours. Your two worm treatments to take in antibiotic resistance. After that, then Jack, it depends on the farm and what where they've come from. Liver fluke resistance is an issue. External parasites is something that you want to take and be mindful of. But the other big one is on lameness, and it's on CODD. And on the O-Hogget thing, Jack, that I suppose the big ones that have to be considered is vaccination for toxoplasmosis, enzootic abortion, and also Clostridial disease vaccination. On the ram side of things, Clostridial disease vaccination is a big one, Jack, because there is a massive change in diet. We could sit here and we could talk for an hour and give out about feeding and give out about the state of the industry. The reality is the industry is where it is. If the farmers going in to buy are as much to blame as the farmers that are selling. That's where it's been driven to. But you really need to, I suppose, maybe be watching how your transition rams, particularly the ones that are on a high meal diet onto a grass-based finishing, and that's trying to reduce them off the sort of level of meal feeding. Some fellas will continue to give half a kilo right up to when the rams go out. They find it just is maybe, just keeps the tone and performance good, and it's not a big adjustment. But for any of them rams that are, say, well-fed or coming off an intensive diet, Just don't go cold turkey on them straight away.
Okay, excellent. No, lots there, Darren. Look, at, I mean, the cap piece, like, I mean, it broke there late last week. I suppose, Darren, it brings together all the kind of EU stuff around the kind of environment and where is it going. And this is the kind of, I call it McConnellogue's angle on it, or this is Dublin's angle on it, like we say, because that was the big push for Brussels to kind of push it back onto Dublin and the minister over there to kind of give them a little bit of flexibility in terms of what they might do at kind of a local or national level. Standing back from the detail, Darren, like, was there any kind of big surprises, we'll say, when Dublin announced this late last Friday, and that you have a lot of coverage in the paper this week on? Was there any big surprises kind of from a kind of a headline, from a kind of a, I suppose, not getting into the detail?
No, Jack, I suppose, look, Minister McConnellogue has been clear in saying he's leaving the door open for all eventualities. And that is really reflected in this document, that the department are looking for feedback on it. There is a couple of bits, Jack, that I thought there might be, say, a small bit more on. I thought there might be a bit more on the active farmer. Now, whether that affects farmers at the moment, it probably doesn't per se. It still is up in the air. We're scant of details on the actual figures around different schemes, but look at, I think, to be fair to the department, say convergence going one way or another, or CRIS going one way or another, affects what money can be put here and there. The big surprise to me, Jack, look at, Adam has talked about it, is whether or not there's going to be that cap on suckler cows and the confusion around that, because that would be a huge change from the norm, and it would be a big statement to say that you're going to allow farmers into a scheme, but they're going to have to be capped on the numbers.
I mean, Darren, if that was to happen, like we'll say, I mean, effectively, it would bring a quota of cows, suckler cows, into the country. And let's say it's a million suckler cows into the country. And then over and above that, cows wouldn't get the payment that we talked about there with Adam, you know, let's say 200 euros a cow again, that the suckler cows wouldn't get that. Like, so, I mean, for new guys coming in or anything like that, then, I mean, how does that work then if there was a cap on suckler cows and they wanted to get into suckler farming because it worked for them? Like, how does that work? Like, if they not, if just not get the payment and they can get in all they like, is that it?
No, Jack, it's actually worse than that. So, say, on the sheep improvement scheme, so if we look at the sheep welfare scheme, because this has been the case in the past, is this, and also on the BDGP, is there's been a reference figure. And a farmer is based on that. So it would be two historic years, generally, the average of two historic years.
Okay.
Now, the sheep welfare scheme, you can continue to do that. I can go into a new sheep improvement scheme. I can have my reference figure at 100 euros, and I can go the following year to 180 if I want, and I still get my 100 euros.
Okay.
On the suckler side, what they're saying is that if my reference figure is 100, I can't go above that 100. Or maybe they're saying that there could be a small bit of a flexibility built in, whether that be a 5% or 2%. I don't know.
They have kind of a tolerance, okay.
Exactly. But like, they're saying that you can't go above that. That not only can you not go above and not get paid, is they're saying that no, the statement is that there is a cap that farmers cannot go above. Now, look, I think that for next week, there'll be a lot of talk around this, and there'll be a lot of clarification needed. And also, there's a line in there around that there'll be certain, I suppose, maybe circumstances.
Force majeure type thing.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, if they're going to stick with this cap, Jack, well, then we need to have more information in the consultation document around what are those exceptions. Because as you said, does it affect the young farmer? Does it affect the farmer that has a few extra heifers coming in to a herd and keep a few extra cows? Like, it really, I suppose, maybe there's a lot of questions around the actual specifics of how that's going to come into play.
And can that be traded between farms? Like, I mean, if you have a quota for 30 suckler cows, you only want 20, can you trade off the 10 to me, we'll say, if I'm starting up or something like that, and what value is on it then, et cetera, and that kind of thing? Like, yeah, wow.
Yeah, look, I suppose all of that, like, is totally up in the air. Like, if the objective is to keep a cap on numbers, you'd imagine that they won't even consider that a trading regime because it still allows numbers possibly to increase from one farm to another. I would imagine that looking at the document is that this is that if Jack Kennedy has 20 cows and he's referenced, that's the most he can have is 20 or maybe 21 or right. whatever that be like.
Yeah.
Now look, at we'll be pushing for more details, but it's the big talking point in the last few days.
And Darren, I mean, the other piece like that's missing from that documentary that was released last week is like there's no numbers on any of the schemes, like, well, you know, in terms of the monetary value, like, so everything is kind of effectively thrown out there, you know, all the sexing, the genotyping, all the bits and pieces, like we'll say, but the weighting of it, you know, in terms of what money is going towards it, like, is not known, you know, so we don't know how important kind of any of these schemes are going to be in the overall picture.
No, Jack, I think, look, that is a missing element of it. Like, we don't know whether it'll be, I'd say 20 euros a year, because I won't go back and say the tenor, but, you know, there'll be more measures, so you'd hope going forward there would be an increased payment. We don't know on the dairy calf whether it's X amount for the number of calves, the genotype, X amount for more. And look, I can see why some of that probably can't be sorted there at the moment. But that where I see the modelling has to come is more so around the convergence, the CRIS, the ECOR schemes, because we do need more clarity around that. Like, we do need more clarity if we're to go to 100% convergence, what impact does that have? How many farmers are affected? Because that will inform the debate.
Okay. I mean, but Darren, I this is a consultation period we're in now for this month, like for this month of August, like, which is already kind of moving on. Like, you know, I mean, how can farmers kind of, you know, realistically kind of get their head around it if they don't know how it's going to affect them, if they don't know the money? Like, I mean, you know, it's easy consult when, but I mean, it's hard for farmers to make up and give kind of real opinion on what it's going to do or not going to do if they actually don't know how it's going to affect them. Like, especially for, I call it your clients and Adam's clients, in terms of where a large part of their income is made up of what comes in the post. Like.
Oh, definitely, Jack. Look, it is hard to say for them to sit down and to see what's happening on that. Look, I think we will see figures shortly. I think that we will see some figures being released. I imagine that next Wednesday and Thursday night's meetings, that's where you'll probably see some of the more detail coming in and somebody from the department presented different scenarios. Or at least I hope that's what's the case, Jack. I hope that there is a bit of bite or a bit of detail around that, and that farmers will be able to then say, right, this affects me. This is the opinion I have, or that this is the feedback I have. And look, I've already got a good few calls from sheep farmers in particular around, say, the sheep improvement scheme, saying we don't know the exact detail on that, or we'd like to see this. And the point I'm making to any of them, Jack, is this: even if we don't have the detail, get your say in on an element that you'd like to see coming in. Like, and I use this as an example. The sheep welfare scheme was a firm favourite among farmers. Every farmer, I think, would welcome it. But there was three little niggly things in it. One was the reference year was set historic, so it wasn't up to date with current numbers. And I know the department's hands are slightly tied on this. It can't be linked to couple payments, but the reference year can roll. So I'm telling farmers, put in that they want to see that. The other two little things was there was no grace period to replace colliers, and your hoggets couldn't be taken into account, say, as calculated or included in the calculations until they turn 12 months a year, whereas farmers would like it to be a fair on the 1st of January. There's no details in that, Jack. Them details won't come at the moment, but that's not to stop anybody putting in to say there's a weight coming behind that, and the department have to sit up and look and to see.
Okay.
But I know exactly where you're coming from, is that it's hard to maybe put in something like, and look, we have done figures in the past. We put them back out online over the weekend around the different scenarios around convergence, how many farmers it was impacting, how many it was benefiting. And hopefully next Wednesday we'll have more to go by. And this time next week we'll be talking with a bit more sort of certainty around that sort of the cap budget, the overall budget, where it's going to fit.
I mean, Darren, and I'll leave you on this now because I've taken up enough of your time. But I mean, in terms of the environmental piece, like there's a siphon coming out of Pillar 1, the 25% into eco schemes. There's a siphon coming out of Pillar 2, which is a new I call it rep scheme, we'll say, like, where there's going to be 50 or 60,000 farmers in it. Like, there's a large proportion of the pot of money that's there going towards some kind of an environmental, some kind of a measure there for farmers. Like, we'll say, that's like, if you're to stand back from everything else and kind of get yourself out of the noise, like, that's a big, huge change in terms of the whole policy piece here that's happening.
Massive, Jack. And even the document itself, like, puts, you could say it's fancy words, like, is that they described it as having a green architecture. Now, you could say green whatever you want. The reality is that there is a focus in this new cap on environment, biodiversity, climate change, like we've never seen before. Mm. The focus away from producing or supporting farmers to produce food for EU consumers below the cost of production is even further broken, is the way I would describe it. And like, you talk about the eco schemes, you're taking 25% of a payment away from farmers that they're going to have to jump through hoops. The cartoon summed it up this week, yeah, in the paper, is that they're going to have to do something from it. And the devil will be in the detail in that. Amy has a piece in this week around, say that it could be leaving up to 5% of land fallow. And like, that's a big sort of change. Like, it's a long time ago since they talked about leaving land fallow on tillage, like, but this is coming across all farms. Like, they're looking at bringing in scrub land, which is to be commended, but the devil, Jack, will be in the detail on what exactly farmers have to do to get that back. And on the agri-environmental scheme, I was talking to Aidan a good bit on this. Like, I think that the brief on that needs to be wide enough that every farmer can be able to get interest. We've seen with the Duhallow project and the EIP Agri, look, there's plenty that dairy farmers can do. It might be different than what the farmers linked to sheep or linked to beef are doing, but that has to be open to every farmer, Jack. If you're going to take that big of a pot of money and ring fence it into different schemes, Linda, it has to be a wide enough brief that every farmer can get to it without it costing them too much money. But also that it deliver a dividend to the farm and to the environment as well.
Yeah, excellent. Darren, listen, lots of coverage online and in print this week. So super job, well done. And look, we'll chat again next week in terms of the cap and what happens as the story develops and as we get more information. Thanks for that. We'll leave it at that for this week. John, I mean, I'll stick with the cap for you for a minute, just kind of on the dairy side of things. Like, I mean, I suppose there's a couple of pieces that stand out from the dairy side. And I suppose one of them is the whole area kind of around dairy beef and that whole area of genotyping and maybe sexing and you know, maybe getting subsidized for taking on those technologies. Is there, do you feel there's a lot of interest out there from dairy farmers in terms of, you know, either genotyping or sexing, like, that they'll take it on if there was a kind of a subsidized scheme there for dairy farmers?
Yeah, I think, like, over the last couple of years, people, like, Joe, the major expansion is, you can say more or less it's finished now, that the majority of the expansion is done, and that a lot of people are looking at doing their five weeks of dairy AI and then pushing into the AI with the beef side of things. And look, it will, with the Jersey straws and that, I know people are trying to focus on getting the sex semen in for the jerseys, right, to cut out the Jersey wool calf. And like, the more that's, like, people are definitely open-minded and are working towards it, and that the dairy beef index is going to become more important as well, like, trying to breed good calves.
Yeah, I mean, the big thing on the genotyping thing, John, is that that you get the result back quick enough. You know, I think they're talking about kind of an 18-day turnaround for these genotype results. Like, I mean, that has taken a lot more time in the past, we'll say, to get the results. But, like, I mean, if you're a dairy farmer, you calf down that beef calf, whether it's a stock bull or whether it's a DBI calf, a high DBI calf, like, I mean, if you want to sell it, like, I mean, you need to get your genotype sample away and the result back as quick as you can, like, you know, because it's your heavy workload period and you want to try and move the calf off for the calf's welfare as well. You know, you want it kind of going well, we'll say, from the very start, you know. So getting that genotype result back quick if you're going selling it will be all important.
Yeah, definitely. Like they'd want the results would have to be coming back as quick as the BVDs. Like Joe, that's the thing. Like Joe, it's a matter of taking the sample and getting it off straight away. And in the past, it hasn't been the case. Like if when farmers need to hear it from the different groups, like of people who maybe get a calf that might be going to AI or something, or to send off a genotype for a Frisian bull calf, and it takes weeks to come back. Like Joe, and it's not ideal because you have this calf hanging around then, and especially if you go on to a larger scale, then like you're, as you said, welfare point of view, like facilities, it'll all have to be catered for too. Like if that happens.
Yeah. The other piece, John, is the whole piece around sexing, and that like it's a great technology, obviously, and it has huge advantages. But I mean, Aidan was making the point in the journal there this week that like there's a lot of poor fertility herds there, and if you start using sexed semen on those type of herds, like you could end up with a basket case altogether in terms of fertility. You know, it's not for sex semen is not for everyone because it does reduce the conception rate, we know. So like, I mean, you have to be very careful in terms of how you use that product. Like, isn't that fair to say?
Yeah, definitely. And it's not even that there's herds with poor fertility. It's some of the herds with the best fertility. There still is cows in those herds that are not suitable. So like they have to be calved a certain length of time, have to have had no difficulty calving, no health cleaning. Like a cow suitable for sex semen is like she needs to be in the prime of her fertility, mm-hmm. basically. Mm-hmm. And it's also down to like timing. So you need to have it's down to farmers being able to spot the cows bulling and the right time to go in with your straw, because it's not as Joe, it's not as as easy to do as your conventional your semen, or as easy to manage, I suppose.
No. Yeah, I mean, as you say, the delayed piece in terms of AI, they're talking about is it kind of 15 hours, you know, from the onset of heat. So, like, I mean, you're waiting, she's almost gone off heat when you're kind of AI in for sex semen. Like, yeah, that's one of the big issues. Like,
Yeah, definitely. And that's the thing. And Joe, if you're going in too early, then you're losing and she's slipping 3 weeks. And then the other side of it, if she's not suitable for day one, she's waiting till she's nearly gone off heat isn't going to make any difference either.
No, absolutely. So look, that's from the cat perspective, I suppose that's the big thing in terms of dairy farmers, that there might be a subsidized scheme for genotyping or sexing. We don't know. We don't have the detail in terms of the monetary side of things, what it's going to cost. Because like there is a cost to sexing and there's a cost to genotyping, you know, and what way that'll pan out, like in terms of if there's a lot more animals going through that or not, maybe there's going to be a reduced rate or something. We don't know. So we'll be following that, John. We might chat again next week and just to see if we have any more on that. John, in terms of grass growth and what's happening out there, like is it fair to say, and you said it in the quick fire round, like there's a very mixed picture out there. There's some guys in the east that are still feeding a lot of silage, feeding a lot of meal, waiting for grass growth to come. But on the other side of the house, then there's probably lots of grass in some places.
Yeah, definitely. Like, and it's amazing. Like if you talk to different farmers in the different groups that I have with the grass land management course, like the rainfall across, like there's some places have had plenty and growth is starting to push on now. And other places, it's very hit and miss. Like the neighbour is getting rain, but they're not. It's very like it's showers and very localized showers that are hitting. But like as a whole, like growth is back. Growth, like you're looking at average growth for last week, for the last 7 days there that went in onto the journal this week was 45. Like, so that's back from up in the mid 70s there the last couple of years. So, and it's a hard one because we're telling people to start looking at building covers, whereas you've other people then who are trying to get some form of grass into the diet. Like, so there's a fine balance there. And those, look, the rain, I'd say it's fair to say that most places probably have got the rain at this stage. And it's a matter of, in them cases, pulling up the handbrake, like going in with your feed, which lads are, and even silage, good quality bales, and just slowing things down big time and letting grass build. Because look, you will get that push once the rain has come. Now you'll get that compensatory growth that will push things down.
I mean, John, I mean, that's what I'm taking really from you here today, is that, like, I mean, those that are short in grass, they need to be feeding some kind of a forage source to get the diet right now and to kind of hold up the farm to allow it to grow. Like, so that they have to be feeding some kind of forage. Meal alone probably isn't enough. No, I mean, the other side of things then is, though, it's the it's early August, and as you say, from mid-August onwards, we need to be start building covers on farms. So again, those guys that are not short at the moment, they still need to be building grass. So again, they have to do their sums in terms of maybe feeding a bit more meal or silage, quality silage bales to try and kind of hold them up.
Exactly, yeah. And it's like what we're always saying, like if you're trying to build grass, you're pulling your demand back down. So if you're growing 40 this week, you have to pull down your demand back to below 40 to be building. And that means in that case, like you're going to have to be looking at, depending on stocking rate, you'll be going in with some form of silage, like and on top of the meal, or else like what guys can do too is bring back in, providing they have enough silage made for the winter, for what however long they'll be housed, is going bringing more ground back in. So bringing more ground back into rotation will reduce your demand as well and open up the platform there a bit. So.
Correct, excellent, 100%, John. We'll leave it at that for this week. We'll chat in next week. Right, folks, that's it for this week's. Thanks for watching, and indeed thanks for listening. Thanks to all our guests once again this week, Adam, John and Darren. Listen, if you want more from farmersjournalwebinars.ie, go to ifj.ie/webinars, and you can listen to this show on a podcast wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be back again next week. Until then, stay safe and stay farming.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.